Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Seth, probably the one good thing about Cam Newton sucking is that maybe it gets some of the smoke off of Josh McDaniels as a candidate for the Texans head coaching job, which I know you are not in favor of.
No, yeah. I don't think anybody is, right? Like, everybody's done, aren't they? I mean, you're done with the whole New England experiment.
Well, you and I are, but do we know that Jack Easterby and Cal McNair are? I don't know. I'd rather be safe than sorry and let the Patriots go 4-12 this year and, you know, keep the heat off of, any sort of coaching heat off of Josh McDaniels as a potential candidate. Better safe than sorry.
I do feel that Easterby understands that not everything in New England is perfect, and you can't just, you know, copy what you do in New England and transplant it somewhere else. Having said all of that, I'm very, very hesitant to ever hire a coach from New England unless he's had a whole lot of other experience. Like, Brian Daboll has been in New England twice, but he's also been a coordinator with three teams now, I believe, and worked with several different NFL teams. He's the offensive coordinator for the Bills. So I feel like he's kind of he's his own man, perhaps, potentially. Josh McDaniels, there's two problems. One is that the vast majority of his NFL experience has been with the Patriots. He went to the Broncos, had a good start with the Broncos. Then the NFL caught up, you know, and circumstances caught up. But I'm willing to believe that he's learned from that experience and maybe understands better than other people exactly what you can do in New England that you can't do elsewhere. But I can't get over the fact that he had agreed to take that job in Indianapolis, and guys, he filled out a staff, guys made life-altering decisions, and then all it took was a couple hours with Bill Belichick, and he was back in the building.
Yeah.
I have a really, really hard time being the guy that – it's like, you know, it's like going out with somebody who is like a notorious philanderer, like who cheats on their spouse like any and every chance they get, that somehow, oh, wait, I'm going to be the one that locks that person
down. Yeah, they won't cheat on me.
I'm not going to subject myself to that.
Yeah. Right. A couple texts here from
the other, and also I take no joy in Belichick suffering as much as he does or might this season. Well, okay, I take that back. I will take joy in it. I don't think it's going to be the final say on whether Tom Brady or Bill Belichick was the better coach or quarterback, because frankly, Tom Brady is working with a whole lot of talent down there in Tampa. Belichick isn't right now. I do have to point out one thing, because this irked me last night. Yesterday morning, I was talking about how Belichick went 10-5 with Matt Cassel, and right. So did Todd Haley.
Right.
Both those guys went 10-5. I was waiting for this. I was anticipating it, and some guy, this Steve character on Facebook, came at me and said, "Patriots went 11-5 in 2008. You uppity jackass!"
Wow.
And Sean, he put it in meme form. He put it on a meme, like with a picture of an abstract phonograph or something. It's weird. Yes, the Patriots went 11-5. Matt Cassel went 10-5.
As a starter.
Do you see the difference? Yeah. Don't send me an insult in meme form and be wrong with your actual insult. I couldn't sleep all last night because of this bastard calling me an uppity jackass over being correct.
Do you want to put his name out there, Seth? Do you want to, or are you gonna protect him here? This Facebook
person. I'll protect this guy.
All right.
Yeah. We used to be friends on Facebook. I've never heard of him in my life, and then he called me. I think he thought because we're friends on Facebook, he could, like, playfully call me an uppity jackass.
Yeah.
No, homie, don't play with that if I don't know you, bro.
Right, no, they're friends on Facebook and actual friends, two different things, okay? Two different things.
For shizzle. Yeah.
Okay. That was a hotkey, just to be clear. Seth did not just drop a full shizzle in there. A couple texts here from people listening on the radio.com app. This one's a little graphic. Ever since I became an out-of-market listener, I became incapable of listening with my pants on due to the crystal clear quality on the radio.com app. That's awfully disturbing, but it's flattering, but a little disturbing.
Yeah. That's one of the 17% of people who listen exclusively for the erotic effects of hearing our voices that we talked about earlier.
No, I know. It doesn't make it any less awkward, though. Yeah. But I like that. We'll take a million more just like you. The next text here, I love the radio.com app, but it makes texting the show a little cumbersome, reacting in real time and not 2 hours later, a real dilemma at times. I don't know what to tell you there. We're not going to do away with the rewind feature. We're keeping the rewind feature. I would just say, if you want to text in real time, get up at 6 a.m. with us. That's how you can guarantee that you'll be able to do that. 713-572-4610 if you want to get in on the show. Here's our friend Texans Bill. Speaking of loyal listeners, Texans Bill, who is as diehard a Texan fan as there is out there. And Seth, as you pointed out earlier, probably listening at a time yesterday when you and I were talking about the feasibility of moving J.J. Watt in a trade. He's pulling into work, and he makes a classic Texans Bill video that he put up on Twitter expressing his disgust with people suggesting that the Texans trade J.J. Watt.
Hey, guys, pulling into work, trying to stay calm. I just need to know if somebody ain't idiots want Jack Easterby's to trade J.J. Watt right now. And some of you's the same ones that were sitting there last night on Twitter going, oh, look, Carlos Hyde. Could have used him. Wink, wink. Oh, look, D'Andre Hopkins. Ow. Why did we have to trade him? Oh, because we're idiots. And now I got to watch David Johnson every week. So y'all solution is to let the man who shares responsibility in that go ahead and handle the J.J. Watt trade, huh? That is f***ing stupid. I don't give a shit if his value is greater right here in November, October than it will be in March. Let a real GM trade his ass in March. He's under contract 2 more years. I don't care if his value's higher now. I guarantee a real GM probably going to get better value then than Jack Easter bitch is going to get now.
Wow.
Whoa. It got aggressive.
Whoa, Texans Bill.
We do not advocate that last part there. Yeah.
This is... My favorite Texans Bill videos are the ones where he's so genuinely worked up about something that he slips out of character a little bit, because usually he sounds like a completely moronic yokel. Where here it was like, other than saying Deshaun Watson and a few Andra. Choice words like that, actually sounded pretty eloquent and made some cogent points.
He did.
Bad acting job, but some very good points. And I'll say this to Texan Bill's credit. He this morning put on his Twitter some of the best rebuttals to Texans Bill's points, one of which is this. If the Texans were to trade Deshaun Watt or J.J. Watt right now, J.J.'s got 10 weeks of pay left, which would be $8.2 million, which you could roll over into next season. So it's whatever draft pick plus, in effect, $8 million that you could use to – help, you know, sign other free agents.
Absolutely.
Or younger players, or re-sign some of your own. So that's not chicken scratch right there in terms of the money. The other good point that Bill had pointed out is that if JJ suffers a serious injury the next 9 games, his value in March is shot.
Yeah.
That by Houston FB pod guy.
That is the risk that's the risk with Watt and Fuller, is the injury risk of not doing a deal. They are both... You would be selling high medically on both of them right now, Fuller and Watt, if you were to move them. Let's drop a phone call in here. Let's go to Zach. Zach, you are up on Payne and Pendergast. How are you?
Yeah, I was actually concerned with how the Texans drafted for the past 2 years. And to be honest, they haven't been very good draft choices. None of them have really been effective on the field. I don't think many of them are really starting. You know, the only one that comes in that I mostly see is Lonnie Johnson and Titus Howard. But even with that, everything that O'Brien has done within the past couple of years, it has not been effective. It hasn't been long-standing or long-term as, you know, some of the draft picks, the draft choices that Cassidy or Rick Smith has done. So at this point, I feel that the Texans are going to be going into a rebuild that's going to be, hampering Deshaun Watson's abilities. And for him to be so-called the Jordan of the league, Jordan did go through the process of one rebuild, and that's when he first came in. But at this point, Deshaun will be going into his fifth and sixth year in the next couple of years, and it's kind of too late. You know, he should be at the highest preliminary levels now than he should be coming towards the beginning or the end. He should be at that point right now.
Zach, appreciate the phone call. You know, this may be something.
Well,
we can carry on. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Zach.
So I guess what's I was going to see. I don't know if what Zach was building to was it that you need to try to compile draft picks. Because the Texans, nobody has played their rookies this season fewer snaps than the Texans. They're not on the field. Ross Blacklock's out there, and that's about it. And he's looking very much like a rookie. You're right. From last year, there's, you know, Max Sharping isn't playing anymore. Lonnie Johnson's out there trying to learn how to play safety. Tytus Howard has been doing the things a first round pick should be. So it's really, and Amenihu is out there too. So really three and a half draft picks from the last two seasons. So I don't know if he was building to, like, do you need to build as many draft picks as possible? I get it, because you're bereft of young talent right
Yeah,
now.
Underrated on the list of things that this team needs, and they need cap space, they need draft picks, they need competent head coaches and general managers. They need good talent developers at some of these position groups, Seth. I mean, they've got a bunch of young players that they've expended draft capital on that, quite frankly, they need to develop into some good cheap labor for this team over the next couple of years if this team's going to get back on track. All right, speaking of J.J. Watt, and I apologize in advance to Texans, Bill, but we're about to talk about trading him. The four teams that I think should be at the top of the J.J. Watt trade board next. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Tuesday. Nice to be with you. Romeo Crennel met with the media yesterday and was asked about J.J. Watt and how to help J.J. Watt. This team's 1-6, and he was asked. He was asked about J.J. Watt's mood and has he seen how depressed J.J. Watt seems over this team's 1-6 start?
You know, we can sit down and we can have conversations and we can talk about what's happening and what he perceives to be the issues and see if we can get those straightened out. But a lot of it will have to do with the guys who play on either side of him, you know, because JJ is a pretty consistent player himself. And so what we have to get those other guys is to be as consistent as he is. And if we can get that done, then I think it will improve. And I think that if he sees that and sees that we are trying to improve and get better, I think that that will make him feel a little better. But he will not feel better until we start winning. If we don't win, he's not going to feel better.
It was a pretty honest answer from Romeo, where it was almost like he's like, look, JJ is clearly the best player there, and until all these other guys get even remotely close to playing at JJ's level, then it's not really, you know, we got to get these guys that are playing at a remotely decent level.
I felt uncomfortable during that entire answer. Like, it turned into almost, it turned into like, is this, what's our goal here, to make JJ feel good about stuff?
Yeah.
I don't think JJ would probably be comfortable with that characterization. Like, what's your number one goal for the rest of the season? I just want JJ to feel better. I just want to be able to tuck him into bed at night and make him feel warm and comfy.
It felt like a recruiting pitch to keep JJ Watt is what it felt like. Hey, look, we promise we're going to try to make these guys who are not very good at least a little bit better to make your life easier. And then, oh, by the way, maybe we'll win some football games. It was a strange answer for sure.
Well, and I guess if you look at what does the immediate future entail for J.J. Watt? If J.J. were to think about it, our caller, was it Zach that just called before, kind of made the point that, boy, these last two drafts haven't yielded a ton of great players. Lonnie Johnson is very much a work in progress. I think Amenihu and Tytus Howard are going to be the only guys you can count on from last season's draft that are viable pros. And this year, nobody's playing hardly at all other than Blacklock, who's still, you just can't tell yet what he's going to be. Yeah. That means that the young, cheap guys there's no pipeline. It feels a little bit like the Astros pipeline right now. There aren't a whole bunch of guys that are going to replace some of these more expensive guys or guys that are getting older, and you're already not a good team. So does JJ, can JJ expect to be competitive next year just because they bring in a new head coach?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question JJ has to ask himself. I mean, to the level where they're going to be a Super Bowl contender, I mean, I think we'd sound delusional if we said yes right now, would we not? A Super Bowl contender?
I guess, to predict it, yes.
Yeah.
To say it's possible, I mean, I've just seen so many turnarounds in the NFL, and increasingly so with each passing year. If you have a quarterback, and just with a few key position changes, yeah, I mean, look at the Titans. Look at where the Titans are right now compared to where they were a few years ago. I mean, they've been a consistently mediocre 9-7 team or so, just barely scraping the playoffs. And then all of a sudden, a coaching change. Arthur Smith was a guy who was on the roster already, or who was on the team already, but Arthur Smith becomes the offense coordinator, Ryan Tannehill the quarterback. A few small changes there, and all of a sudden, they're a genuine Super Bowl contender for two straight years. So, yeah, I think it's possible.
The teams that are on the board to make a trade for J.J. Watt, I think we all agree, they've got to be contenders. That's going to drive the most trade value, is a team feeling like, boy, J.J. Watt could be a piece, the last piece, or in the case of some of these contenders, a desperately needed piece, like a team like Seattle, whose defense isn't very good, as we saw on Sunday and we've seen throughout the season. So Seattle, Pittsburgh, Green Bay, they all get brought up for various reasons. Seattle, because they've done business with the Texans before. They're not afraid to make deals. Pittsburgh, because of the two Watt brothers. They're the only undefeated team left as well. Green Bay, JJ's from Wisconsin. Oh, by the way, they're a contender. Seth, the fourth one, as I was going through all the teams yesterday, why not Tampa Bay? And I know they've got a great defense right now, but why not Tampa Bay, that seems to be assembling almost like this cadre of veteran dream team type players with Brady, with Gronk, now Antonio Brown coming in. It's a, why not take a really good defense and make it an even better defense in Tampa Bay? Checkmate kind of move.
That's what Bruce Arians had said when they asked about adding Antonio Brown. He said, well, this team's too good. I'm paraphrasing. He said, this team's too good to not explore these opportunities and bolster it every chance you get. I mean, the Buccaneers are probably the most well-rounded team in football right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that they only have $4 million in cap space. That's one issue. I mean, you can shuffle that around a little bit, but they're already, I wonder how much capacity they have for not just trading a pick, but also pushing some more money off into the future for some of these players. Maybe if they think, hey, this is a 2-year window, this is how we're going to do it, and we can redo Shaq Barrett and some of these other guys. You know, Mike Evans, his contract could be redone and save a whole bunch of money. I think it's very possible. I would be surprised, though, just because they already have some good pass rushers.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's where they have to stretch themselves uncomfortably against the cap.
All right. 713-572-4610. Let's go out to Stafford and talk to John. John, you're up on Payne and Pendergast. Good morning.
Yes, sir. Before I ask my question, the one thing I wanted to say, and I wanted to say this for a long time, I still blame Cal McNair even more than Bob, and the reason is simple is he gave him all this power. I understand he wanted to be either fail or be successful. But Bob never once did anything to deserve all this power. As far as I'm concerned, he was bad in draft. You know, he's bad in the players he picked, bad in the players he kept. And also the real problem, I think, with Bob is he wanted players that met his mold, only his mold. And a perfect example of that is DeAndre Hopkins. Maybe off the field with his girlfriends and stuff, that wasn't a big deal. But you know what? He was a good guy. He was a great player, and he was a good citizen. And if you don't agree with his lifestyle, fine. But don't get rid of him and ruin your team because of that. And the same thing, I think, with Clowney. Anyway, here's what I was asking. What do you think? You just said something about trading. What do you think reasonably we can get for some of these players, you know, third round, fourth round, whatever? Just give me an idea that the 3 or 4 players they've been talking about trading, what do you think we'd actually get? And the other thing is, if we're trading to a contender, remember, if it's Seattle, I'm not saying that they're going to trade a second, but if they say trade a second, it's a real far back second. These are not going to be high draft choices, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Could you please think about that?
Sure. Thanks, John. We appreciate the phone call. I think, Seth, if I'm looking at the players that are – to me there are 10 players that have a chance reasonably to be moved in the next 8 days. I don't think they're trading anybody who's on their rookie contracts because those are cheap labor guys, and they've got a few players that I think teams would want. You know, Justin Reed would probably get you something decent back in return, but you've still got him at a reduced rate for the next couple of years. I think it's going to come from these 10 players, and I put them in order of what I think the player who would get the most – to the player who I think might get the least based on performance or contracts. I think it goes J.J. Watt, Will Fuller, Brandon Cooks, Bradley Roby, and I think that's where you draw the line of going, okay, those are four guys that might get you a day two pick, a second or a third rounder at best. And then I think the further down you go, now you get to guys who are day three picks. Randall Cobb, Zach Cunningham is, I know, a guy you don't want to move, and I don't think they're trading him, but you'd be selling low on Zach Cunningham. We'll put him off to the side.
Right, and that's not to be clear, he's playing poorly this year, yeah. But yeah, I think you'd be selling low, and you gave him that money because of his upside. To put it in baseball terms, he's in a slump, I suppose, and if you believe in his long-term future, you got to keep him around.
And then these guys, I think, get you a day three pick, probably a sixth or seventh rounder if you moved him. Kenny Stills, Duke Johnson, Darren Fells, Whitney Mercilus. I think that's what you're looking at. So I think if we're drawing a line, I think Watt, Fuller, Cooks, Roby are above the line. And I think Cobb, Stills, Johnson, Fells, Mercilus all fall below the line. And that line is either a day two or day three pick. I don't think anybody's getting you a day one pick. Nobody's getting you a first round pick.
Yeah, and as far as what the caller started off saying about Cal McNair, yeah, I think that Cal McNair hopefully does accept responsibility for, man, we let this thing, we went the wrong way. I think that based on the one statement we have from him, I think he understands that because he's said the one point he's made is we're going to hire a general manager, then we're going to hire a head coach. Like, we're going to keep this thing the conventional way. I do think also that there – I don't want to be, I'm not trying to turn this into anything dramatic or anything, but Bob McNair was sick for a while before he passed away. And I think that there was a transition period there when Cal was taking over full time and for real between the departure of Rick Smith, everything that happened with Bill O'Brien, there were a whole lot of imperfect circumstances in that, yeah, maybe if they could go back in time, they would have handled it differently. I think this is where you finally clear the deck and you say, look, Cal's in charge. This is how we're going to do it. We can hire a general manager and a head coach at the same time, which is the way you're supposed to do it. And as ugly as the whole last 18 months of Bill O'Brien was, maybe ultimately it just clears the way to start genuinely fresh and new, which the Texans really haven't done since – well, like Gary Kubiak and Rick Smith were hired in the same year. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and even then, Casserly was still around for another year doing that 2006 draft.
No, he was only there for the offseason. Kubiak came in. Kubiak was hired. Casserly stayed through the draft, and then they hired Rick Smith that summer.
Right, right. No, but I'm saying he did stay through the draft. Like, there was still a tiny bit of, you know, there was still a tiny bit of over. Like, this would be, like, truly, you know, starting. In concert with one another. All right. Let's take a spin around the league. And then there was one, we'll call it, the NFL candy store. We take a look around the weekend that was in the NFL. 713-572-4610 if you want to get in on the show as well. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast. All right, week 7 is in the book, so let's do what we do every Tuesday at 8:35-ish. And take a look at what went on around the league, the NFL candy store. We begin in Ohio. The battle for Ohio, which I don't know if there's a state in the country that I would least like to battle for. Ohio's probably on the short list. No disrespect to anybody who's from Ohio. But it's not the most fun state in the world. I like to call it the Florida of the Midwest. But Cincinnati and Cleveland are the two NFL teams in Ohio. And when they hook up, it's a big deal. And after a rough start early, Baker Mayfield got to winning late.
Mayfield back to pass. Looks, going towards the end zone, and it's caught by Donovan Peoples-Jones. Touchdown! He got it! He got it! The rookie from Michigan got it with 11 seconds left to go!
Well, there you go. Baker Mayfield, a big moment for him. They win 37-34. That call, obviously, courtesy of the Browns radio network. The big story coming out of this game, Seth, Odell Beckham Jr. done for the year with a knee injury. But as you pointed out to me during one of the breaks, Baker Mayfield's numbers once Odell went out with his injury, because he went out early, pretty good numbers for Baker Mayfield once Odell Beckham Jr. went out of the game.
Yeah, he was 22 of his next 23 attempts in that game after Odell Beckham Jr. went out. I think that two things can be true. One is that the biggest problem in the passing game has been Baker Mayfield. It hasn't been Odell Beckham Jr. I do think that Baker Mayfield can play better for the rest of the season, even without Baker Mayfield in the game. But that's not to say that it's because Baker Mayfield is gone, or it's because Odell Beckham Jr. is gone. I think it's just that Baker has struggled that much. Now he showed more signs of him starting to actually get and understand the offense. Helps when you're playing against the Bengals, of course. But that he can be way better than he was early on. He would be still even better if he had Odell Beckham Jr., but I don't think all is lost for Browns fans.
Seth, you know what the narrative is going to be if Baker Mayfield, all of a sudden the light goes on for him. It's going to be that it's addition by subtraction, because we know that Odell was not all that hepped up last year about the way he was used. Now, granted, that was a Freddie Kitchens joint, not a Stefanski joint like it is this year. But you know how that's going to go if Baker Mayfield all of a sudden becomes a top 10 or 12 quarterback, and it's largely based on a productive second half of the season without Odell Beckham Jr.
Well, I guess, I mean, do we know how it would go? I mean, we know what people would say, but yeah. I think that Odell, I mean,
that's what I mean. Well, the narrative, that's what people were saying. Yeah.
Right, which I guess is, okay, great, that's what people are saying. But Odell Beckham Jr. this year hasn't, maybe he just hasn't reached down here. Maybe I haven't been paying close enough attention. We haven't really seen any drama out of him, have we?
No.
Or just heard that he's not happy or anything. So I think if anything, Odell Beckham Jr. comes back next year pretty enlivened with the challenge if the Browns show some sign of life. Yeah. And I'm silently and quietly pulling for the Browns, even though I go back and forth with Baker Mayfield. Sometimes he annoys me, but then other times I watch his commercials and I'm entertained. I think back to his rookie year and how good he was, and that I also remember that, boy, all the things that people are saying about Justin Herbert right now, they sure were saying about Baker Mayfield too. I love the back and forth nature of people just saying that a quarterback has arrived and then like 6 weeks later saying, I can't believe that we ever thought Daniel Jones was good.
Yeah. Next game, I teased this segment by saying, and then there was one. There is one undefeated team left in the NFL. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers, who built a big lead against the Tennessee Titans, but the Titans punched back and they got to the point where they had an opportunity to tie the game late.
It's do or die for the Titans, who have one timeout in their pocket. Yeah, they're going to bring the kicker, Guskowski, out for a 45-yarder. And Guskowski in this range this year as he kicks it on its way. The kick is wide right. It is no good.
All right, so that was Guskowski missing a field goal. Seth, I don't know
again
that I've ever seen a kicker have a stranger season where Guskowski, we remember the season opener that the Titans played a Monday night game, I think against Denver, and he could not make a kick until they needed a kick to win the game at the end of the game. The Titans' first three wins of the year, Guskowski kicked a field goal in the waning moments to win those games. And then we saw him against the Texans in that overtime game. He had a 27-yarder blocked. He missed one from short range from 30. He's not missed a kick from 50 yards and beyond this year. But he's 1 for 4 between 40 and 49 yards. It's the strangest year I've ever seen for a kicker.
Did you mention the Denver game?
I did.
Yeah, okay. All right. I didn't know if you had the stats on that or not. It's been a really bad one. Look, the Titans are they're a plucky team themselves, Sean. And I think that one thing that's happened is, if you didn't realize it already after the Titans game versus the Texans, Tannehill is a genuine, oh, crap, he's got the ball with 2 minutes left player at this point. He is that solid of a player, in that even though he's not putting up the exact same numbers that he was over the back half of last season, which frankly, I don't think any player could necessarily keep up those numbers. He hasn't regressed nearly as much as you would have expected him to, as I did. Like in a lot of respects, statistically, he's not doing the same things he was last year, but I think he's actually a better quarterback this season. I don't think he's relying as much on the play action setting up for him. There are times where he's just sitting back and dealing from the pocket, and he's the guy you're going to probably have to face for the next 7 or 8 years in the division.
Yeah, I thought they were nuts. Maybe not that long. I get what you're saying. Like, he's 32, he's going to be a problem for the next few years for this. They signed him for 4 years. If I had to guess now, he probably sees that contract. I don't know. I felt like that deal and the Derrick Henry deal were not great deals for the Titans. I was happy as a Texan fan that they gave him those deals. Look, it's only 6 games into these deals, but so far so good for the Tennessee Titans.
T.J. Watt was really angry after this game that they let the Titans back into the game.
Mm-hmm.
He sounded a lot like J.J. Watt after the game. The big difference is that it was after a victory that T.J. feels like they let it get too close. There are different ends of the spectrum right now.
I feel like that should prompt a text from J.J. saying, "Hey, bro, settle down. You won the game. You could be 1-6 right now, all right?"
All these self-help books these days, one of the latest trends of the last few years is to be grateful. Just be grateful, all right? Everything,
that's right.
That's your key to everything. Just be grateful.
They are the only undefeated team left, and they are the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's move to Washington, where the Washington football team put it on the Dallas Cowboys 25-3. So this transition from Dak Prescott getting injured for the year to where there were people out there like me saying, "Hey, Andy Dalton's pretty good backup. I think they're still going to move the football. I still think they can win the division." Now, they still can win the division because the division stinks. They're still only a half game back of Philadelphia. At 2-5, the Cowboys are. They're only a half game back of the Eagles, who are 2-4-1. The big highlight in this game, I hesitate to call it a highlight, if Andy Dalton's family is listening. It wasn't a highlight, but the replay from this game that's getting played over and over was this hit on Andy Dalton.
Dalton back to throw, and they protect him, and he rolls right and runs out of the end zone and slides at the 10.
That's going to be a late hit.
Oh, he got nailed.
Yep.
And he is not up yet. His helmet got knocked off, and there are literally 4 flags down there. Dalton's hurt. Ben DiNucci, warm up, because it's going to be an automatic first down.
Ben DiNucci, warm up. The words that you do not want to hear if you are a Dallas Cowboy fan. Seth, the league has adjudicated the hit that John Bostic put on Andy Dalton. And violent as the hit was, there will not be a suspension for John Bostic. There will be a fine for John Bostic, but no suspension for this hit on Andy Dalton. What do you think of that?
This is one where you've got to go back and watch it in real time. Because when you watch it in slow motion, especially if you're watching it where Andy Dalton has already started his slide, it looks dirty as hell. In real time, and I went back and I watched this 10 times and I freeze framed it, Bostic lowered his shoulder while Andy Dalton was still running. And it, almost simultaneously, Andy Dalton initiated his slide while Bostic lowered his shoulder. He would have been aiming at his midsection, which, you know, you got to try. It's hard these days. And this is where I am on this. I'm not on the fence at all. I think that, yes, he should have been ejected because that's the letter of the law. It's not fair at times to expect guys to be able to hit this postage stamp size target, but you got to protect the quarterbacks. But I don't think it was malicious. I think he was trying to make a hit on a guy who at the moment was still running. Dalton slid late, and Bostic ends up hitting him. So I think it's probably right. You got to have the rule in place for the protection of the players. But this was not like a receiver who was laid out and obviously vulnerable that you went at and targeted. I think this was just, it was an unfortunate circumstance. I guess Bostic, in the future, I mean, when he's facing a running back like that, it's almost like you can't even plan on hitting him. No. You just got to do a Zach Cunningham tackle. You got to go up and try to stand upright and arm
feet.
Tackle him and hope that he goes down.
Oh, that's what he said. Okay, so Zach Cunningham is doing that to keep everybody safe. That's my takeaway from that.
Yeah. Now the other thing, too, is people were upset that Cowboys players didn't stick up for Andy Dalton and go after John Bostic. All right. I guess, yeah, I guess they should have showed him what for and given him the old roughhouse treatment. I don't know.
Yeah.
Fine. Yeah, sir. That's what's missing with the Cowboys, is they didn't stick up for Andy
Dalton.
It's an
easy...
Not the actual bad football play.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this happened and that happened the same week as Cowboy players speaking out anonymously that they hate their coaching staff. Probably you throw it all into one big dysfunctional stew, and that's where we are right now. Meanwhile, in the late games, the afternoon games, two teams going in opposite directions, one with the quarterback, the other with the head coach of six Super Bowls in New England. We start with the trajectory up. Tom Brady has the Tampa Bay Buccaneers playing the best of any team in the league right now.
Here's Brady looking, throws toward the end zone. Caught ball, Tampa Bay. Gronkowski makes the catch. Took it away from the defender. It's a touchdown, Tampa Bay. And Rob Gronkowski, for the second week in a row, has a touchdown.
A little scary if you're in that NFC South, Seth, that not only do the Tampa Bay Bucs have the best defense in football right now, Rob Gronkowski seems to be getting his sea legs under him, and Antonio Brown is about to become a Tampa Bay Buccaneer as well. It's a really good football team right now.
I think I am, I don't know if it's 3-for-3 or 4-for-4 since 2014 when Tom Brady has gotten off to a slow start. Everybody just loves jumping on the, well, that's it for Tom Brady train. This year it didn't make any sense at all because I think a lot of people were saying that Tom Brady just didn't have it and they were basing it on a few of the bad plays instead of actually watching him. Every time I watch Tom Brady, like in the midst, even after that first game when everybody was talking about how troubling it was, I thought, man, I thought he played a pretty good game. And it's gotten better as guys have gotten healthy on the Bucks offensive side of the ball and as everybody started to learn the system. And I think we're going to see exactly what you see with Tom Brady at times, especially when he's working new receivers into the mix. Once they get on the same page with him, once they understand exactly what he wants, and he is the best wide receivers coach in the NFL, that it's just going to get better from this point out. The 2-minute drive that he had at the end of the first half was just absolute mastery of the 2-minute drill. They got it down to the point where when he threw a touchdown to Scott Miller with 25 seconds left, he still had a third down available. They could have kicked an easy field goal. It was precision clockwork. Now, compared to a few weeks ago when he thought that it was third down when it was actually fourth down, that was a rough spot for Tom Brady. But I feel like he's back on all cylinders now.
Yeah, no doubt. Meanwhile, in New England, the arrow's going the other way for Bill Belichick. They lose to a former New England quarterback. Jimmy Garoppolo goes into New England and beats the Patriots 33-6. Not a great day for Cam Newton.
Cam drops back, looks down the middle. He throws it off Edelman's hand. Careens in the air, picked off. Running it back across the 30-yard line. Jamar Taylor with the interception.
That's Scott Zolak doing the call. That's all you can hear. Him. It's awful. Oh, come on, sit him down. That's Scott Zolak. If you're wondering, that was not a fan sitting in the booth lamenting Cam Newton's failures. That was his third pick of the game. Jared Stidham would come into the game after that. Seth
Zolak had a moment too where he was grousing about the fact that Cam Newton was on the sideline but wasn't wearing a helmet. And didn't have a headset on, so how did he know what play call it was? I think he was criticizing him for just kind of checking out of the game.
Yeah.
I saw later in the game Cam had a helmet on or it up to his ear at one point. But, yeah, I guess. I don't know. I have a hard time. I never really criticize genuine franchise quarterbacks when all of a sudden they don't know how to handle being a backup. Because one of the things that makes great quarterbacks great is that they have incredible egos. And Cam said all the right things after the game. Yeah. But when you've been benched for the first time in your life, am I going to criticize the guy for not handling it completely appropriately for the first 2 minutes afterwards? Nah.
God, that's a great – I mean, you never think of it that way, Seth, that Cam – that's probably the first time he's ever been benched in his whole life. Like, why would Cam ever get benched in Pop Warner or high school or college? He won the Heisman Trophy. He's been a number one overall pick. Holy crap. Like, this is it. Like, this is individual failure. He's experienced team failure. This is individual failure to the level he's never experienced before.
That's why, honestly, I thought when Eli Manning handled it probably the best I've ever seen from somebody who had that same treatment growing up, right? He was one of these chosen ones the entire time up through high school, college, and into the NFL. So when it came time for him to be benched, he handled it with such class that it was almost, it was painful to watch because you could see how much it was affecting him emotionally. And again, Cam afterwards said all the right things. He was very much like took accountability for his own play, all of that. I don't know. I've got no need to like say, oh, look, there goes Cam when maybe for the first series or two he didn't have the helmet on.
All right, the blueprint to keep Carlos Correa and George Springer long term. That's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.